Good evening and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm tonight's host of Your Legal Rights, Robert Wyman. And the topic for tonight's show is legislation and how laws are enacted. We have two guests with us tonight, and I'll give you a brief bio of both of them. Sabrina Ostin is director of the California Environmental Legislation and Policy Clinic at UCLA School of Law. Through Ostin Consulting, she does legislative and regulatory consulting internationally, nationally, and locally with clients ranging from investment firms to nonprofit organizations. Ostin has been appointed by two governors to serve the state, first by Governor Brown to the Cannabis Controls Appeals Panel, and most recently by Governor Newsom to the Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board. She is president of the National Women's Political Caucus of California, vice chair of the American Red Cross Pacific Coast Region, vice president of California Women Lead, and vice chair of the American Bar Association Civil Rights and Social Justice Section Environmental Justice Committee. She sits on the advisory boards of California Lawyers Association Environmental Law Section, and she's admitted to practice law in California, New York, and the United States Supreme Court. Also joining us is Beth Mora of Mora Employment Law. Mora is a passionate and accomplished advocate for employees facing a wide range of employment law issues. Beth currently serves on the California Lawyers Association Labor and Employment Law Section Executive Board, as well as on the CLA Government Affairs Committee. Beth's current volunteer duties include co-lead of legal aid at Workers' Rights Clinic in Contra Costa County, California Employment Lawyers Association, Legislative Committee and Fund and Advisory Board. Beth is often invited to speak and has published numerous articles, as well as been quoted in legal journals on issues impacting employees in the legal community. Due to her advocacy and volunteerism, Beth has received numerous accolades, including the Joe Posner Award, the Justice James Marciano Distinguished Service Award, Best Lawyers in America, as well as Top 50 Women and Top 100 Attorneys in Northern California by the Northern California Super Lawyers. So, Sabrina, Beth, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yes, thank you for having us.
And as always, we're eager to hear from our listeners, to hear what's on your mind and answer your questions. Our phone number right here for the station is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you are outside the local dialing area, the toll-free line is 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. As always, you may call regarding any question on tonight's topic, California legislation and how a bill becomes law. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in the conversation, but bear in mind that our guests cannot provide individual legal advice, as they won't have all the facts relating to your particular issues. This is a bit different than our usual consumer-related topics, where some of our callers will want to call in about their particular legal concern. But certainly, if you have questions about how, you know, what is a bill, how it's enacted, we absolutely welcome your call. So let's get started. Before we went on the air, we were talking about the fact that we have an election coming up, and I'm going to get this you know, insane booklet with Lord knows how many propositions, and I put it off to the last minute. But when I'm going into that voting booth and voting yes and no on all these propositions, those aren't laws. There's a difference between what I'm doing in the ballot box and what our folks are doing up in Sacramento. Could one of you take the lead and explain the difference between what I'm doing there in the voting booth with the propositions and what a law actually is?
Sure, I'm happy to help with that. So what we're going to be talking about tonight is the legislative lawmaking process, where our legislators who are elected by us and serve constituents are in Sacramento acting on our behalf collectively. There is also another way of making laws, which is what you just mentioned, the proposition system. And so that was developed as sort of an end run around the legislative system to get away from the idea of any sort of political interests or lobbying groups or anything like that having more power than the people did. And so that's how the proposition system was created when it was created decades and decades ago by a legislator's son, actually, which is a crazy story, but I will share that later. But the system has gotten corrupted in a way in terms of lots of now lobbying groups and various agencies now get involved with that process. And you see so much money behind the propositions that that whole system has gotten wild. But they're both ways of making laws. And we can talk about the proposition system possibly closer to the election as everybody's looking at their ballots. But tonight we're going to be sharing just how a bill becomes a law from the legislators themselves.
Thanks, Sabrina. I was going to say that could be a topic unto itself, the whole exactly. proposition mess. And I have strong opinions on that, but I'll save them for when we do that program.
Yes, that would be great.
And something we, and Sabrina, that's really, really helpful. Something we really want to keep in mind, our laws are something that come into play because of people you elect, you put in office, and that can be in your local government, but we're going to be talking about statewide government. We're not talking about federal, we're not going to be talking about local, but we're going to talk about your statewide government. We want you to know that your state legislation has a direct impact on your life. So that's why we want to talk to you all about today about how a bill becomes a law, because even legislation will have an impact on the smallest things to the biggest things in your everyday life. It can impact everything from the duty of an employee and an employer to the amount of taxes you pay, the amount of traffic ticket you might receive. So every person plays a great role in the legislative process, from the person you elect to editing a legislation, to commenting on legislation, to having a voice in the legislative process. And we want to share that with you because it's very important. And we're excited to be talking to you about that today.
Beth, that's what you just mentioned takes me not back to law school, but takes me back to high school civics class. And we often hear people say, well, this is a democracy. the will of the people should prevail. But that's not how we're set up. We're a representative democracy. We, and thank goodness, because I don't know how to write a bill about water control or water pollution. So I elect people to go up to Sacramento who hopefully have the knowledge to write these bills on our behalf.
Well, if you saw, we normally do this as a visual presentation, and if you could see this part of it, we would have Bill on Capitol Hill, which I'm sure a lot of you remember from your civics classes in elementary school and high school as to how the process happens. But we want to demystify that as best as possible right now for you and all of your listeners so that people can figure out how and when they can get involved with the process. So you can go to your local legislators with ideas that you have for things that should be a law or things that are concerning you, and then they can put the process in motion, which we're going to go into detail about in a little bit, about how to actually turn that into a law. And the other idea that we want to demystify is that the legislators themselves don't know everything about every topic. They come with their own specific backgrounds and interests that they want to bring in and do in Sacramento. But there are also a lot of people behind the scenes who help with that process. There are policy committee consultants for each committee. There are the legislative council, which does a lot of the drafting of the legislation. And so the reason why I want to tell you all that is because I want you all to know that you can go to your legislator with ideas that you have. You don't need to come to them with a complete bill package in order for them to move forward with it. You can just talk with them about the idea, and then the legislative council and the policy committee consultants can help putting that in motion.
It's funny because all week I've been humming the Schoolhouse Rock song about how a bill becomes law.
Exactly.
And you bring up a good point, Sabrina, because I occasionally will go up to Sacramento and I'm a lawyer and I'm concerned about issues that relate to my area of law. And I'll say, gee, I really wish that we could do X. Why can't we increase this benefit, or we need to change how this process works? Help. And what's the first step when I go, legislator, help me. I think that the law should change in this direction.
I think what we need to keep in mind is that laws are based on lives. They're based on humans. The best ideas don't necessarily come from lobbyists or attorneys or even legislators. They come from humans and their life experiences. Talking with everyday people and the experiences they have come from great ideas. So let's start from the base. Everyone knows or they don't know. You'd be surprised how many don't. There's 40 state senators and 80 assembly members. And all you have to do is do a general search is who's my state senator, who's my assembly member, and you can start a conversation with them. And the legislative session is 2 years. So it's often helpful to start a conversation with them before they've introduced legislation. And then we can talk about the legislative timeline, but it's often wonderful to start a conversation at the end of the calendar year or the very, very beginning of the calendar year, because there's a very distinct timeline of when bills need to be introduced. Did you want to go into that, Sabrina?
Yes, that's a great point that it's actually perfect timing that we're having this conversation this evening because the legislative cycle just ended last weekend. And so now is the time where legislators are starting to go back to their district offices, meet with their constituents more regularly because they won't be in Sacramento for the next few months. And they will be thinking about those new ideas and policies that they want to bring forward that will begin in January. And so now is actually a great time to be thinking about this and looking into these issues of what should be law, what should their bill packages look like, what should the things that they bring up on behalf of their constituents be. And we're also, Beth alluded to the fact that legislative sessions are 2 years long. They coincide with the election, which is, as we all know, is coming up in November. And so there will be a quarter turnover of the legislature. So there will be So a quarter of the legislators who will be starting in Sacramento in January will be new, and it will start a new two-year session. So now is actually the ideal time to be thinking more big picture about what are some of the big issues that they should be tackling over the next 2 years on behalf of their constituents.
And let's talk about big picture for just a minute, because I think most people are probably more familiar with what goes on in Washington than what goes on in Sacramento. So in Washington, we've got the House, we've got the Senate, and we know that bills can come from the House, bills can come from the Senate. They go back and forth in some magical way, and at some point they end up on the president's desk. And something analogous is happening here. We have our state senators, we also have the assembly members, and then we've got the governor. And as I understand it, the bills can come from either place. It can originate in the Senate, it can originate over in the assembly.
Yes, Beth, do you want to talk about this or would you like me to?
No, that's great. So the basic outline of how a bill lives, you know, you've got your great little bill guy leaning against the Capitol steps singing, "I'm just a bill." But truly what it is you have the idea. The idea needs to be introduced and it needs to be read and introduced by the deadline. And there is a deadline that is set every year. It is often within February. In January, in 2024, it was February 16th. It will fluctuate. And then it goes to committee hearings. And we're going to go into depth into each one of what this means. It goes to the second readings and then a third readings. And then these committee hearings are very, very important. So it goes through a first, second, and third reading and committee hearings. If it makes it through its house of origin, it either assembly or Senate, and then flips. If it flips, wonderful. But it also has to make it through appropriations and budgets and what have you. But it has to do the same dance on this other side of the house. And go ahead, Sabrina.
I interrupted when you were about to talk about the timeline. There's a timeline. And I think, Sabrina, you said this is a good time to be having this show because there's certain times when the legislatures can do certain things. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yes, and I actually wanted to go back to your prior question and just elaborate on what Beth said, which was very helpful about the timeline. But I think you also asked about who introduces the bills. And so assembly members and senators are both introducing bills. They have between 40 and 50 bills that they can introduce, depending on if they're in the assembly or in the Senate, over the course of that 2 years. So that's 40 different ideas, 40 different topics, 50 different topics. And they all look at all of the bills. So what that means is bills that were introduced by assembly members go through the assembly at the beginning, and bills that were introduced by the Senate go through the Senate at the beginning. And then they have what's called the crossover, which happens in late May, early June, where the bills move to the other house and they go through the exact same process all over again. So everybody votes on every single issue that comes forward. And then it would go to the governor's desk if it gets through all of those steps. So it's similar to the federal process. And also, I think that it's helpful for the listeners to know that they can either be talking about their issue with their assembly member or their senator. Everybody has one senator and one assembly member. And then I don't know if you want to share about the timeline a little bit more, Beth, or do you like me to?
Well, the timeline is just very exciting for people who are drafting their bills, watching their bills. They pay very close attention. So, for example, they worry, did the bill get introduced in time? Did it make it passed? And so, for example, this year, the last day for any bill to be passed was August 31st. So people knew if it wasn't passed by that day, you know, it wasn't going to pass. And my dear friend Sabrina, being the legislative geek that she was, what was she doing on a weekend on August 31st? She was watching the live feed of the legislature till what, midnight? Because you can sit there and watch them as they walk through all the remaining open bills. And it is a political show. There is a lot going on. And if it doesn't make it out of the Capitol on August 31st, it's closed. That's the end of the timeline. But that date changes every year. And then a bill that last day to get for the governor's desk to sign or veto this year is September 30th, which is pretty early this year. So anyone watching their bill will know if it's going to get signed or vetoed by September 30th. So these calendars are set every year and everyone knows what the calendar dates are.
So, and Beth just brought up a good point. Oh, sorry, I keep doing that to you. So
no, that's quite all right. So just so I understand, that August 31st date, that's a date that the bill's got to be ready to go to the governor. It has to be passed by both the Assembly and the Senate by that date.
Yes, and I'll point out that the date specifically does change every year, but the timeline itself is the same. So, for instance, it's the third Friday in February, or you know, the 30 days from the time where bills go to the governor that he has to hear them. But the dates themselves will change slightly each year. So, you know, that's something to pay attention to. But I think I know that Beth was mocking the fact that I watched the legislative session. And
Respecting it.
Yeah. I think it's actually a really exciting night, and I urge everybody to watch the last night because it gets a little wild. So there's banging on tables and cursing and yelling and, you know, a lot of filibustering if people don't want bills to be moving forward and that sort of thing. So it's actually very exciting, but I will point out, though, that people can watch these hearings at any time. You know, I don't know how many listeners will want to, but you know, perhaps if you'd like to just kind of get a sense of what happens on a daily basis, you can pop in and watch a committee hearing on Zoom or on the live stream. And so it's kind of interesting sometimes if there is an issue area that you are concerned about. Let's say that you are interested in environment, which is what I do, then you can watch one of the environmental committee hearings. Or if you're interested in higher education, you might want to watch a higher education committee just to get a sense of what kinds of issues are being debated. And is it something that you want to get involved in? Is it something that you want to advocate for or against, or go to Sacramento and provide testimony, or call your representative and say, hey, I hope you vote yes on this, or I hope you vote no on this, or here's my story as to how this issue affected me. And so it's a good way to get a sense of what's happening there. And they put it online in an easy way so you can watch or listen so that people can feel involved.
Oh, I've been a lawyer for over 30 years. I had no idea that even existed. I see C-SPAN and you can see that the empty chamber with one person pontificating for hours. Exactly. But it sounds like as you get to the end of the session for getting bills passed, it gets pretty exciting. So we can go on, somewhere on the state's website, there must be a link. We can go and actually watch this process and watch laws. The sausage making. We're gonna see exactly how this whole thing works.
Yes. And so you can go to the California State Assembly or the California State Senate, and you can actually see what's happening that day, or you can kind of get a sense of what you are interested in. For instance, a committee will meet every week or every 2 weeks. And so you can see what's on the daily file for that committee, what bills and issues they're going to be hearing. And so you can pop in and watch little bits at a time. And so I think it's very exciting and interesting to see what happens. I think that even though we don't feel, directly involved sometimes, our representatives are working on our behalf. And so I think it's interesting and fun. It's clearly, you see my definition of fun, but I think it's fun to watch what happens.
Well, let's take an example of a piece of legislation. And if you're an individual and you want to voice your opinion, let's walk through how someone might participate in the process. If they're not a legislator and they're not a lobbyist, I think it would be really great for listeners to learn how to participate in the process and voice their opinion. So for example, let's say there is legislation pending on, something that affects employees and they're very adamant about it. Employers are not. And so you're an employee, you want to voice your opinion on this. There are multiple ways you can voice your opinion as just a single independent employee. You know, you don't have a ton of money. You're not donating money. You want to just voice your opinion. There's multiple ways you can deal with this. For example, you can contact your individual legislator. You can contact their office by leaving a phone message at their local office or their Sacramento office, identifying the legislation and saying, I support this or I don't support this, and this is why and who you are. You can write a letter to your individual legislator explaining the legislation and your concerns with it or your support for it. You can contact the bill author with the same support or opposition and why. You can also go to the bill portal, and we can explain what that is in a second, but there's multiple ways to log into the bill itself at different windows. There's two or three different windows. What's that? Three, right, Sabrina? Yeah. When the bill is up for hearing in the assembly, then in the Senate, and then when it goes to the governor's desk, or when it maybe goes to the governor's desk for signature, you can write a letter into the bill portal when it's tracking saying you support or you don't support the legislation. And when the bill is at committee hearing, for example, in either assembly or Senate, you can actually show up to the committee. You're not an invited speaker. We'll talk about that in a minute. But they do have an open window where you can stand up and say, I am Jane Doe, or I am Beth Mora from Mora Employment Law, and I support or I oppose this bill. You don't get to have a spiel. That's different. That's invited speakers. But they do pay attention. It's really important. You think just a phone call may not matter, but it does.
And speaking of phone calls, I'm going to break in just a moment and remind our guests that our topic tonight is legislation and how bills are introduced. And I have here, not in the studio, but through the miracle of Zoom, Sabrina Ashton and Beth Mora. And I just want to give out our phone number again. It's 415-841-4134, 841-4134. Or if you're outside the local dialing area, you can call our toll-free line at 866-798-8255. Beth, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Okay, let me think. One of my favorite ways to get involved in pending legislation, writing legislation is different. We'll get to that in a second. But one of my favorite ways to get involved in pending legislation is going to the legislative analysis. Once it's hit committee, it will show me the organizations that support the legislation or oppose the legislation, and then contacting those organizations. Some of them already have built-in mechanisms where they're writing letters, they're engaging in campaigns, and then reaching out to those organizations. They have sample letters, they have posters or things like that that I might want to use myself. So that is also a way that you can use the power of organizations to help your voice get stronger. Any other suggestions, Sabrina?
That's a great point, Beth. And I will also add on to that. You mentioned that the legislators do pay attention to who calls. They actually do take tallies. So it's very important to call on an issue that you care about, even if you think that it doesn't matter, or even if you think that other people are calling. It's still important to call and say very quickly to a staffer who answers the phone, I know that this issue is coming up. This is something I care about. I just want to express my support or my opposition. And they tally that, write it down, and then they keep track so that they can figure out, you know, gauge the temperature of constituents about whether they care about an issue or not. And something that I also don't think people realize is just how many thousands of bills are going through the legislative cycle each year. And so that means thousands of different issues are being heard. And so a lot of times things don't move forward, or there's some attrition, not even because it's a controversial issue or anything like that, but just because there is not as much interest behind it as some other issues. And so they'll just kind of drop it for the year because they're trying to focus on some of the bigger issues. And so not expressing support or opposition sometimes leads to a bill just not moving forward and advancing because there haven't been enough eyes on it and attention to it.
The other day I was dealing with a consumer issue and I was trying to contact this company, and I thought to myself, now what's the best way to get a hold of them? I can call the 800 number, but that never goes anywhere. Or maybe I should send an email. What's the best way to reach a legislator? Is it an old-fashioned letter with a stamp? Because I'm told sometimes, like with corporations, that's what got the attention of this company that I was trying to deal with. I sent them an old-fashioned letter with a stamp on it. I got a call back 2 days later. So should we email? Should we call? Should we write a letter? Do all three?
You know, I'll say, and Beth, please jump in as well. I have found that if you're calling about a bill issue, it's helpful to call their Sacramento office. So every legislator has an office in their district, as well as an office in Sacramento. And so if you look online, it will show the phone numbers for those. If you call the Sacramento office, the person who answers will be able to take note about what issue you're calling about. If it's something that's more local, that is a concern in your community that you are seeing and you would like their input on, or like them to address and fix for you, then I would suggest calling their district office, and the staff at the district level are out there in the community helping on other issues throughout the community.
Yeah, and
it works. You don't have to sit down and write a letter. You can definitely just make a phone call.
Do all three, or is there one you prefer? What do you think? I do all three.
People are comfortable with.
So one of the things I want to point out is often if we're members of associations or groups, you'll get a form email, autofill in your address, and then this email will be sent to your legislator. I say go for it. Read the content. Make sure you're comfortable with your content, because that your name is going on that. Don't just send it. But make sure you're comfortable with the content, or change the content if you're not comfortable with it. But I also say send your own email as well, because you don't want your voice being lost in we got 20 of these form emails or 200 of these form emails. Send your own individual email or personalize that form email. But either way, sending an email is very important, as well as a call.
Okay, so not just that form. It's kind of like, again, getting back to the petitions at the grocery store. I mean, who knows what's really behind that? And they're asking for my signature on it. So when I get these emails saying, you know, please support, and it always sounds like a wonderful cause, and they want you just to click and sign your name. But you're telling me that we should really do some research and find out what we're clicking on and what we're asking our legislators to do when we get those weird emails.
Very much.
And that's why it's helpful to see who else is supporting or opposing it. Is it a trusted group, a group that you believe in, as opposed to just everything sounds good when, you know, somebody's advocating on behalf of something. You know, everybody makes it sound like a really wonderful topic. But yes, do your homework, a little bit of homework, to see what the issue actually is.
Okay, and that's perfect timing, because we're going to take a break just a moment and have the station identify itself. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7, and we will be right back.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. And now back to your legal rights.
Thanks, Joanne. So that break was at the perfect time. We've called our legislator, we've emailed, we've done whatever, and we want them to do something for us. So what's the first thing that legislator is going to do, assuming they're interested in our topic?
Beth, do you want to take it or do you want me to?
Oh, so what I was mentioning before is also voicing your opinion on active legislation. So don't forget, you can always voice your opinion on active legislation. You can always contact your legislator about inactive legislation ideas. For example, a lot of your legislators will hold town halls to provide you data about what's happening, but also listening rooms to hear from you and hear from your ideas. You can contact them one-on-one and share ideas, but you can also go to these town halls and share your ideas in these listening times. I strongly suggest you create relationships with your elected officials. They work for you. So if you want to share an idea with them and propose it becomes a piece of legislation, they may tell you why that may not work because that idea has been floated four or five times or some other issues, or they may actually think on it and it may take two or three or four years. I've worked on legislation with people that took seven or eight tries, but that doesn't mean it's not important to hear from you why it's important, because sometimes it's that fifth time or that eighth time that it's tried in that human story that's connected to it. So it's really important. I can't underscore enough how important it is that people get involved in the process. It's not just voting that's getting involved in the process. It is taking that everyday experience that was important to you, that affected you, and sharing it with your legislator and saying, how are you going to help me? Is this something could be a law? And they may turn to you and say, actually, it already is. Here it is. Or it may say, oh, thank you for sharing. Let's talk about that. And you need to have those communications so you can help all of us who are in this space work on it. So, yes, it starts with those conversations, and we can't say that enough.
Okay. So we've gotten their ear. We've met them at the town hall. They've gotten our emails, and this legislator says, that's a brilliant idea. I want to get a bill passed. What do? They get a yellow pad and start writing a bill, or what? I have a hunch that there's more people involved, and you alluded to that at the beginning of the show. There's more people involved, and these legislators, we can't expect them to understand. They're expected to know about water and about tax and about my area of expertise, workers' compensation, and they hate workers' compensation. Their eyes roll back in their heads when I start talking about that with them. They can't be expected to know about all of these things. So they've got this staff that helps them out, or how does that work?
Yeah, so bills actually get written in a number of different ways. I previously worked for the Humane Society of the United States, and in that role, we actually crafted legislation ourselves that we thought should be introduced, and we would bring the actual legislation that we had drafted to legislators to see if it would be something that they would be interested in carrying or moving forward. And they, of course, would make changes to the legislation to, put their own spin on it. But that's a way. So a lot of nonprofit organizations and advocacy organizations will come with actual language that's been drafted. Sometimes the legislators themselves want to write the bill. They or their staff will actually do the writing. But many times the idea and the concept is given to the entity that we alluded to at the beginning, the Office of the Legislative Council. And they are the ones who draft the bills for the majority. And they go through and they cross-reference every other law that's already on the books. They are experts. They have the institutional knowledge. They work there all the time. It's not something like they're not elected or come with the legislators or leave, you know, after a term limit or anything like that. And so they are often the ones with the institutional knowledge and do the cross-referencing to make sure there's no unintended consequences or there's no federal preemption issues or it's not already a law or it's not going to interfere with another law that already exists. And so oftentimes they're the ones that are doing that actual drafting. And so I think that's also helpful to know, because I think a lot of people don't know that and they think, oh, well, if I come up with an idea, I need to actually put pen to paper and write that. And how would I do that? Or, you know, they might think, oh, my legislator doesn't know about this topic, so how are they going to write an entire bill about this? And so that's a helpful piece that I think a lot of people don't know exists, as to who actually does the pen to paper writing often.
And these are folks that don't work for one particular legislator or one particular senator. Right. So any senator or legislator can go to them and say, help, I want to pass this new bill on leash law or something. You mentioned the Humane Society. Help me with this.
Yes. And I think that that's also important that you just mentioned. They are not partisan. They are not working for any specific legislator. They're not trying to advance any specific issues or kill specific issues. And so it really is a very objective analysis and look at these bills and explanation and help with putting it together.
So they'll do the actual drafting of the bill and then hand it back to the senator or legislator to see what they think?
Yes, and then it goes back and forth in a process, and then other people have input as well, and that's where the policy committees that Beth was mentioning come into play. So once the bill is actually introduced in the world, then it will be assigned 1, 2, sometimes 3 policy committees. And so if it's about an issue involving higher education, it will go to the Higher Education Committee. But it might be something that involves higher education and the judiciary. And so those policy committees there will be discussion and debate about the bill, and there will be what's called amendments that are made, so little changes that are made here and there. And so that's why it's important throughout the process to get involved, to, you know, say that you're interested or not in something, because it's constantly evolving for the entire process from February to August. It's constantly, there are different iterations of the bill that will go on as these consultants and committees and public gets involved.
So there,
I'm not sure I've ever seen a bill introduced that has ever gone out as introduced, even in the most rushed times during COVID. They always have amendments and edits. So it's important to pay attention to the draft as it is, but you're commenting on when you send an opinion, not the original, but the current draft.
So getting back to my leash law example, so my legislator now has this bill in front of them. And there's maybe an animal rights committee up there in Sacramento that they're now going to take a look at this and see, well, do we like this, or what needs to be changed, or how does this interfere with or override some other area of law? And they're going to make their changes, I assume.
Exactly. And that's a good time where the bill author will have people come and testify on behalf of the bill. So they will have 2 people come, and Beth can talk about this. She's done a lot of testifying on behalf of bills. A smaller group of legislators will hear that. So each legislator sits on a few policy committees. And so those are ways to become more expert in certain areas and drill down on a lot of the specifics of the language and the unintended and intended consequences, people who are interested or not. And so that's where a lot of these changes happen in terms of what the language begins at as to what it looks like at the end. For instance, the example that you just provided, let's say they realize that they have to add the dimensions of the leash, you know, let's say how long the leash is, or they need to add something about who's going to enforce it. Are the police going to enforce it? Is animal control going to enforce it? Who's going to be the enforcement mechanism? And so all of these things will be added and changed throughout the process to make something at the end that hopefully, you know, makes the most sense and is the most able to move forward.
And you mentioned the legislative hearings. I've never testified. I've been at a few with the legal organization I belong to, and we'll bring in one of our smart lawyers to talk to the legislators. We'll usually bring in a layperson to share their experience. So what's the purpose of that? Who's listening? Who's up there listening to the people giving testimony, and where's that information going?
Well, that's a great question. I think it depends on the bill. It depends on what policy committee you're in. So, for example, the ones I'm often at and testifying at would be employment, labor, employment, or judiciary. So if you have a bill that's on harassment or some sort of amendment to a discrimination law, you're often going to have an attorney with experience in that area and or a layperson, a victim of some sort of relevant discrimination, for example, speaking to why this amendment is important for them. And it's important because it gives context to the legislation and why you're seeking the legislation. And that gives the legislators an idea and humanizes the legislation. It's very important for them to understand the purpose of it, not just because the language can be dense, the language can be complex, and it gives them real life people to put life to why you're seeking this legislation. And I found that in many times for the human aspect, the individual who has suffered the discrimination, they don't often have questions. But and they thank them, they're compassionate, they're understanding, it is helpful to humanize it. For the attorney, there often be questions about impacts for cost of legislation, cost to employers if you're at a counsel for the employees. But so there, it's a time then to fetter out political positions. It's a time to fetter out the impact of the legislation and how it could impact society and again their political positions and thoughts. And so it's just like you would imagine it would be in almost any other setting. But that is, there's not supposed to be long. The person speaking has 2 minutes to do a statement. And then the people on the policy committee, the legislators, have their opportunity to ask questions. And then once that part is done, the other side does the same thing. And then it's open to public comment where people just come in and say their name and their support or they oppose. And sometimes it's a really long group of people. Sometimes it's very short. And it's interesting to watch.
So in your example, we start with perhaps the victim of a sexual assault, and there's a bill to strengthen the laws. And then the legislators are going to ask some questions of the lawyers there. And then I'm assuming some employers group is going to come in and call me a cynic, but they're going to complain that this is too expensive. This is going to drive jobs out of California. They're going to give their opinion. They're going to have someone give a statement, and then their attorneys are going to be questioned.
Yes, it's traditionally very much just like that. And often it's hard to listen to the victims. They often share a very traumatic experience and talk about how hard it's been. And I think the legislators, even if they have difficult questions for the attorneys, they do a good job. It's a tough policy committee. And labor and employment is a tough committee to be on for people, I would say.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to clarify one thing. So Beth was talking about the attorney that will get questioned. That could be any kind of expert. It doesn't have to be an attorney. It's just usually chosen that there will be some sort of expert and some sort of layperson giving the testimony. But that's just, that's not a rule of thumb. And the expert could be somebody who has a PhD in astrophysics, if you know it's a bill having to do with that. And so it's any sort of expert or any person who can come with more of the like data background about something.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen some really wonderful, I love it when we're late on the calendar, even though I do have a lot of work to do. I've seen some great hearings on Planned Parenthood legislation, related legislation, sorry, on abortion rights. And there'll be someone from Planned Parenthood there. They are clearly not an attorney if based on their role, but it's their experience. And they have some really good speakers that come in and talk about their life experience related to the legislation. And so the author of the legislation is the person who invites the speakers. And they usually introduce the bill to the committee. And then sometimes they field questions, sometimes they offer it to the people who they've invited to speak.
So this hour is flying by, and we haven't even started voting on this bill yet. So we've had the hearings, and how does this bill get down there on the floor where we see all the people saying yay or nay and voting on it? How do we get there?
Yes, Beth, do you want me to share or do you want to?
Oh, go for it. But I do want to point out one thing about the process before we finish is we're talking about how much happens. This is a very detailed and timely process. And currently, the estimate from the Legislative Analyst's office is that it costs approximately $30,000 a bill to put it through the process in 2023. So I'm sure it's adjusted since then. So with there being 1,046 bills that made it to the governor's desk in 2023, that's approximately $31 million is how much it costs because it's such an extensive process.
And that's the cost of running the hearing and all those people who work up there in Sacramento who analyze these bills. That cost is paying for all those good people to do this work for us.
Everything.
And so once we get out of the policy committee, so we've talked a lot about the policy committees, once it gets out of that committee, and by getting out of the committee, I mean that a majority of the committee members voted to support it. So then it moves to either the next policy committee, or once it gets through all of the policy committees, then the entire assembly or the entire Senate vote, and it's called the floor vote, like you just mentioned. And so every assembly member has to vote on it, and or every senator, depending on if it's an assembly bill or a Senate bill. And so they have to record the yes votes, the no votes, and if somebody didn't vote.
So let's say this starts in the assembly. So and they've had the vote. They've all voted in favor of this bill. It passes. So then it what goes over to the Senate and they take a look at it.
Exactly. And the whole process starts over. So it gets assigned to policy committees. That whole process happens again with the testifying. Yeah, so it's a very tedious process.
I'm starting to understand why this takes so long. So they don't just take the bill and vote on it. They start the process all over again.
Exactly. And so I think people don't realize also that this just goes on for months. And there is actually, you know, a lot of vetting, a lot of transparency throughout the process. And that it's actually an intentionally cumbersome process. Because, you know, it's making laws. It's something that's going to affect people's everyday lives in a variety of ways. And so the idea is that it should not be something that's rushed or, you know, put together very quickly. Obviously, that does happen. And I can talk about, you know, examples of that in terms of things, bills could be gutted and amended. And then it's a totally different topic and things like that. But for the most part, it is supposed to be this long, tedious, cumbersome process so that as many people as who want can be heard and as many eyes on it, as many committee consultants, as many legislators as possible will be, you know, looking at an issue and voting on the issue before it advances. It shouldn't be the case that these things are happening like in a back room in secret. And so that's why it's just this long drawn out process that seems a little, you know, it sometimes seems a little bit like overkill, like to have another committee hearing. But there is really a rationale behind it that it is supposed to be as transparent as possible.
It's funny you mentioned the back room because I remember good old Tip O'Neill. I remember hearing an interview from him years ago saying that, you know, Ronald Reagan and I would go on the Sunday talk shows and yell at each other. And he said, but then at the end of the day, we'd sit down and have a drink. We'd look at a couple of bills and say, all right, how about I give you this and you give me that? And maybe we can get this thing. So I guess at some point there must be some talk between the assembly and the Senate saying, well, we can't agree on this bill. So what can we do to make this something that both the assembly and the Senate can support?
Well, you know, I think what's really important about what you just said, some of the best pieces of legislation have been when both parties have worked together. And if anyone knows me, they will know that that's an odd statement. I get that I'm a bit partisan, but you know what? Working together has proven to be extremely helpful for our society, for our government, for our citizens. And so, yes, the best pieces of legislation have been when there's been compromises, but also consensus about what's best for our society, what's best for our citizens, and what's best for our Californians. So there's been a lot of movement in our legislature when they work together, regardless of who holds the most power in either house or in elected senior positions in government. And so that's true in California. That's true in most states. But California has proven to be pretty darn impressive. And I compliment them because they have done really good job working together on key important issues over the years. So, yes, there's compromise. But also, I do want to point that there are many times where you see a bill introduced in the Assembly and a bill introduced in the Senate, and you look at it and you kind of go, huh, they look pretty similar. And so there are times when they might clean it up and eliminate one or condense them together, and then the authors will co-sponsor together, because that just happens. That's part of the process, is they both introduce. It's not like they have time to sit down and, you know, all kind of check in with each other. What are you going to introduce? What are you going to introduce? That just happens.
So maybe a couple of senators and a couple of assembly members sit down and say, all right, we have these bills, but we're almost there. There's a couple areas where we disagree. And they sit down and they work out a compromise. Does it then go back to a vote in each chamber?
Yes. So a lot of times there will be, throughout the process, multiple caucuses like that where there is communication happening, you know, across the aisle. There's often communication happening with the governor's office to see, you know, what concerns the governor's office may have or what the governor's office may think is good policy or needs changes. And so you can kind of gauge if it's going to be something that moves forward. And so the best times that this happens throughout history, you know, is obviously when there is this collaboration, this communication, open communication amongst all three. So amongst the Senate, the Assembly, and the governor. And a lot of times that's facilitated by those who are in what's called leadership positions. So each, the Assembly and the Senate, have speakers, who is the, you know, the head of the Assembly and the head of the Senate. And oftentimes these conversations and communications are facilitated by the leadership teams.
So really quickly, we've left out the governor in this whole conversation. We only have a few minutes left. So the governor's actual legal power is just to say yes or no. I'm going to sign this bill or I'm not going to sign it. Is that the governor's only technically legal power to say yes or no?
Yes. Although, as I mentioned, you know, he will often get involved throughout the process. But yes, that is the only technical, and I say he, but maybe someday she.
Hopefully someday she, but it's been he in California for a long time.
Right, exactly.
Or they.
Yes, exactly. So we'll sign or veto the bill. And then there are some mechanisms where if nothing happens, does it become law? And there are some mechanisms about the legislature then overriding that. But those are such technical exceptions that never occur that we don't need to.
And I asked that question specifically about the technical role of the governor, because we all know that there's a lot more going on behind the scenes. And I can remember back in the Jerry Brown days, trying to work some legislature through it. And in the back of our mind, it's like, is Jerry going to buy this? What does Jerry think? Mm-hmm. Has anyone talked to Jerry's people to see whether this is something he can support, or are we going to have to make some changes here to get him to sign this darn bill?
You know, and actually one of the things you can do if you're looking at an idea is you can even look at the veto message of a piece of legislation that made it all the way to the governor's desk, and then the governor writes a veto or vetoes the legislation. Sometimes, and I will say this governor has done a great job detailing why he vetoed this legislator. So you can then say, well, how can I fix this?
So legally he's just said no, but he's given a hint to, here's what I'd like to see if this comes back across my desk, and maybe if you do X, Y, and Z, I'll sign it.
Yes, exactly. And so that's very important for the legislators, for advocacy organizations to follow, you know, if something was vetoed, why it was vetoed, because it might be something that's minor and can be fixed. It might be a matter of the governor says there's no money in the budget for this year, but perhaps in a better budget year, this is something that could move forward. And so I know that's something we didn't really touch on, and we're running low on time, but I'll just say there's this other process that's taking place throughout all of this, that's the budget process. And it's very important to get a sense of how we're doing in terms of our budget, in terms of what's going to move forward, because a lot of the issues that are addressed will cost money to the state. And so a lot of times things may not advance because we're in a deficit year, or may advance because we're in a surplus year. So that's also important to pay attention to as you move through the process.
And if the governor signs the piece of legislation, we have a new law in the books in California.
Yes. So usually that law will go into effect January 1st of the following year. There are some times where laws are go into effect immediately, and there are other times where laws are set out for a few years. Let's say it's a law that's going to require an industry to change their standards or practices or operations. They might build into the law that this will be enacted in 3 years or 5 years so that they have the time to make those changes. And so that's something that's often written into the actual language. And I'm sorry, Beth, I feel like I just cut you off.
No, no. There's just one more area of contact that people should really know about. If they, you know, we hear it every once in a while, you hear someone talk about a caucus. There are other ways you can contact your legislators, is that there are members of caucuses. Often they are in the Democratic Republican caucus. There's also like the Legislative Black Caucus, or the Legislative Environmental Caucus, or the Legislative LGBTQ Caucus, and Jewish Caucus, Women's Caucus. There's all sorts of different caucus groups, and then they have their legislation that they often support or draft or present together, and they advocate together as well, and that's often across party lines. So if you see something that is if relevant to your caucus beliefs, you might also contact that caucus and also advocate through that caucus and or their activities. So just wanted to make sure we highlighted that, because there's a lot can be accomplished by reaching out through a specific caucus. And all you have to do is contact, is look on the California state legislature and then search by caucus.
All right. So last question. We've got 1 minute for an answer on this one. Governor vetoes the bill, but that's not the end of it. The legislature can override a veto. How does that work?
Not often. And it's a two-thirds vote in both houses. So it's not often that happens at all.
So the original bill is passed by a majority, but to override the governor's veto requires a two-thirds vote.
In both houses. Pardon, Sabrina?
Sometimes individual bills will need more also, depending on the bill it is and everything.
Yeah, I understand, like, there's higher threshold for tax bills or something like that.
Yes. Okay.
Well, we're about to run out of time. Any last thoughts you'd like to give our listeners before we close out the program for this evening?
Never find the legislative process overwhelmingly unable to participate. Participate. Watch a video, write a letter, call your legislator. They work for you, and your voice matters.
Thank you, Beth. Sabrina?
Don't feel like you have to be an expert by any means. They want to hear stories from the public about things that you have faced. And so don't feel like you need to come with data or any sort of expertise on a given issue. Your lived experience is your expertise. And hopefully you found this interesting. And if you did, we're happy to later on explain the proposition and ballot process, which is a whole other animal in this realm.
Well, I hope the audience found it half as interesting as I did, because I've been a lawyer for over 30 years and I've learned a lot tonight. And I would like to thank you both very much, Beth and Sabrina, for coming and sharing your time with us tonight. And on behalf of Your Legal Rights, a big thanks to all of you who are listening this evening. Special thanks to my good friend over on the controls, Joanne Marr. I couldn't do this show without her help. I'm Robert Wyman. I'm your host for this evening. And tune in next week. I'll be your host next week as well, when we're going to be discussing Social Security law. So I hope to see you next week as well. Thank you, be safe, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.